This episode is brought to you by Rancho Gordo, growing the best and most interesting heirloom beans available. Learn more at ranchogordo.com.
It's September, and as the days get shorter and temperatures cooler, it's time to go back to school. This week on Meet and Three, we're looking at how lunchtime is changing from elementary schools through college, whether classes are remote or in person.
While there was some information about where families could access food, it was spread out on many different websites.
I'm seeing people, you know, advocate for like going back into school, and a main reason is, you know, food insecurity. Like, kids go to school and they get fed, and that's a whole other thing of like fight for kids to be fed versus like going to school.
Tune in to Meet and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to this installment of Eat Your Heartland Out. I'm your host, as usual, Capri Cafaro, and we have a real taste treat in store for you on today's show. We are delighted to have two guests that capture the essence of how diverse cultures have made exotic flavors part of the Midwestern food landscape. Ferhan Jeti is Somali, and Alberto Dinegri is Peruvian. Let's hope I got their names right. Together, they may have just started a trend by joining forces and opening a Somali-Peruvian restaurant in the heart of Columbus, Ohio, a place where I spent about 10 years of my life. So welcome to both of you. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Capri.
Well, I'm so excited, as you can tell. And I know you guys have a very interesting story, but let's kind of start at the beginning. When did you guys get to Columbus, Ohio, and how did you end up there?
Well, I'll start it. And I moved here back in 1996, when I was in high school. We moved from Springfield, Virginia. And as an immigrant, when we came from Somalia, we landed the place we lived at the time in America was Springfield, Virginia. And Springfield was a little bit diverse, was fun. There was like a lot of kids that I was familiar with from Peru, from Korea, from different South
America. Sure. Countries.
So that's where we landed. And then we moved to Columbus, Ohio. At the time, there was not a lot of Somalis, but we were the first few families that moved in. And we have been in Ohio ever since. So technically, Ohio is...
So how many years then have you been in Ohio?
God, since 1996.
Okay. That makes sense, because I know that, you know, over the last 20 some years, Columbus has grown as a pretty large Somali expat community.
Yes, it has grown. We're close to 180,000 families here now.
Wow, that is pretty sizable. I know, at least from my experience in Columbus, really has added to the flavor, literally and figuratively, of our state capital. So, Alberto, how did you end up in Columbus?
Well, I ended up in Columbus. We came here in 2001, me and my family. We chose Columbus because my wife's family migrated to Columbus. Mm. In the late 70s, so they've been here for a while. So we've been here for 19 years now.
You guys are both been in the Buckeye State for a long time now. Yes. As I said before, you know, I spent 10 years basically back and forth in between Northeast Ohio and Columbus when I was serving in the state legislature there. And I did have experience with a lot of Somali cuisine, but I didn't really notice a lot of, Peruvian culture around Columbus. So is it rare that a Peruvian would settle there? Is there a big, Peruvian or Latinx community that I'm missing?
The Peruvian community is small here in Columbus. It's not that large. But the Peruvian cuisine is well known all over the world, so I think it's something that not only appeals to Peruvians, but in the general public, right?
Oh, well, I can't wait to talk a little bit more about the specific food that you know is offered both the Somali and the Peruvian. So hold that thought, because we want to talk more extensively about the food. But I want to find out first how you guys came together. How did you meet and start your restaurant, which is called The Mix, which, you know, seeing the fact that you have both Somali food and Peruvian food on the menu, it makes the name really fits.
Well, how we met is kind of, we met in a, his background is my producer. I have a TV show. And we've been together since 2015, 16-ish. Yeah. Yeah. And one day I happened to walk in at the studio with a nice Somali food. And he smelled, he's like, what is that? We call Ross Soldato. The only thing he's missing is the fries. I'm like, no, this is Somali. So you know how it is, the usual, I brag. After a while, there was one of our customers who used to do commercial, and he called, he said, this will be my last commercial invoice I will do. I'm closing the restaurant. So jokingly, we said, hey, why don't we open a restaurant? But I happen to know that because I used to live in Springfield, Virginia, there was a lot of Peruvian restaurants. And I always, every time that I travel back, I used to specifically go to that restaurant because of the chicken.
You're making me hungry already.
Right. especially that sauce. And so we had a previous conversation. I knew he had an opening in his garage. And so I said, Barbero, I think this is it. This jokingly. And that's how we met. And 3 weeks later, we signed the lease. And here we are.
Well, look, I mean, all good things start, you know, with, a joke, a garage, and really just, you never know where fate's going to take you. And that's pretty incredible that just kind of fate and a whim brought you guys together. And now, how many years have you been in business?
With the restaurant, it's going to be a year in November.
Okay. So you're still relatively new, but it sounds like you're already making waves because of the food that you serve and because it's an interesting mix of both cultures. So let's talk food. What's unique about this menu outside of kind of the obvious? I certainly have never heard of a place that serves both Somali and Peruvian dishes under one roof.
Well, what we do, our menu is mixed, but we don't mix, we don't combine the two cuisines.
Mm-hmm.
We have our own dishes, but our menu is the one that's mixed. We have Peruvian dishes mixed with Somali dishes.
Almost two menus under one roof.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So this isn't a fusion where you're mixing the flavors literally in one kind of plate.
No, because we don't want to lose that traditional taste that both cuisines have.
Mm-hmm.
We want to show our customers the basics of our cultures and our scene. So we haven't fusioned anything, but what we do is we use mostly the same ingredients for both of us on our dishes.
See, I find that really interesting because, you know, in your own way, through food, what you're doing is you're showing your customers and the people of Central Ohio that, here are two countries and two cultures on, you know, opposite sides of the globe.
That's
but
right.
You're still drawing upon the same basic foundation for your food, which, you know, is, I think, probably sends a really interesting message to the people that come and eat at The Mix.
That's right, because what we think is if you sit at a table and you enjoy a meal, it doesn't matter where you come from or what your let's say, political positions, religion is.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy the food and enjoy friendship and have a good time.
Absolutely. So to that end, actually, I wanted to ask,
you know, is a lot of people, and this is what we talk about all the time on this show, you know, people see the Midwest as a place that doesn't really have a lot of, you know, cultural diversity. Yeah. And here you are bringing a lot of really, you know, bold cultures to, you know, the middle of Ohio. Yeah. And how do the people that, you know, live in the community, maybe that aren't Somali or, you know, aren't Peruvian, how do they take to the food that you serve?
Well, I'll be honest with you, Ms. Kapiri, most of our clients demographically are not Somali or Peruvian. They are your typical American families. And most of our customers are within the neighborhood that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
And they loved it. And yes, a lot of restaurants suffer because of COVID.
But sure.
Our support system is based in within the neighborhood Clintonville that we live in.
I love Clintonville. Listeners, if you ever come to Columbus, Clintonville is a great community, a really close-knit community, and one that's I think very very much embraces diversity for sure.
Oh, yes, it's a beautiful thing. So our clients are pretty much confined a different dish, different taste, and another crazy part that we really find out recently was past election primary season.
Mm-hmm.
You can find different politicians, different parties from different places within that restaurant. So our restaurant was really booming when it comes to election for previous primary time. So
I love it. This is a great, very topical right now for as we come into the election as well. And I'm a big fan of talking about how, you know, food is a common denominator that can bring us all together, as someone who spent most of my adult life in public service. So I'm glad to hear that folks from both sides of the aisle are coming to your restaurant.
Yes, they are, and they love it, yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Rancho Gordo. Over the past 19 years, Rancho Gordo has led the revival of heirloom beans, taking the lowly bean from a healthy but neglected member of the vegetable family to a near superstar status ingredient. From growing the best and most interesting beans available to making sure all crops are fresh and a pleasure to cook with, Rancho Gordo's mission is to encourage cooks to experience and enjoy the unique flavors of heirloom beans. Rancho Gordo produces nearly 30 varieties of heirloom beans and lentils, as well as corn, grains, chilies, and other cooking ingredients. You can learn more at ranchogordo.com. That's RANCHOGORDO.com.
So they obviously, people are coming from all walks of life because of the food. So what are your signature dishes? Walk our listeners through what they could get on the menu. And what maybe again makes you stand out a little bit?
Well, on the Peruvian side, the signature dish is the rotisserie chicken.
Mm-hmm.
It's a roasted chicken. It's marinated for 12 hours, roasted on charcoal, Navajo charcoal, with a brine with different spices, and it's very juicy, tasty. It smells wonderful, and you can combine it with rice, with fries, with salad, and they come with two sauces that we make here. One is a green sauce; it's a jalapeno cilantro sauce,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is a yellow sauce. It's a yellow Peruvian pepper that we import in. That's how we make the two sauce.
I was just going to ask, where do you get some of your ingredients? It sounds like you have to import them, but have you adapted any of your recipes to fit maybe either the palate or just the supply chain, regionally?
Nowadays it's very easy to get most of the ingredients. Some of it we import. But you can get most of it there. The suppliers are in New York, New Jersey, but we can get most of them here in Columbus. And the other signature dish on the Somali side is the camel, roasted camel over rice, basmati Somali rice. That is wonderful. So it's a very aromatic rice. It doesn't have any grease at all. So it's very healthy, very good. And the camel is something new here in town.
Sure.
Yeah, people love it. And what's interesting is, we've had people from Latin America, or mostly South America, Peruvians, Ecuadorians, and they tasted the camel, and we have a cousin of the camel down in South America. It's called the alpaca.
Oh, sure. And you eat alpaca?
Yeah, we do.
No kidding.
Yes.
I've learned something new.
Yes. And the taste is very, very similar. So.
What does camel or alpaca taste like? Because I got to be honest with you. Number one, I've never had either to eat. I'm not sure I'm adventurous enough to try either of them. But tell me about it. Tell me what would I could expect if I got enough guts to go eat camel at the mix?
If you've had deer, it's very, very close to deer meat.
I see.
Yes. Yes. And what we do is we take care of the meat, so it's very soft. It's not chewy, and we roast it nicely with the vegetables that come with it. So it's a very, very well prepared dish.
Wow! And people are not afraid. It sounds like they're ready to try something totally off the beaten path.
Yeah, that's right. We've had Ohio State students come in just for the camel.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, it's good. I'm glad to see that people are more adventurous than me. And one of these days, as I said, maybe I'll get enough guts. But I'm fascinated because I've never heard camel served on a menu anywhere in the United States. And I'm assuming this gets imported as well.
It does. It gets imported from Australia.
I see.
Yeah.
So I may have to drive down and check it out just because now you've piqued my interest. My curiosity is definitely up there for sure. Are you surprised actually by the fact that, you know, Ohio State students are coming in and asking for camel, and that, you know, people you mentioned yourself, I believe your words were, you know, they are the typical American, you know, families or whatever that are coming into your restaurant. Are you surprised that, Americans in the American Midwest are taking to your cuisine and are welcoming it as in the way that they are?
I am, actually. And as I said, when it comes to specifically the camel meat, the most requested family demographics are your typical average American family. And you might see a grandpa with the kids or the nieces, and they will say, let me try it. And at the end of the conversation is, I loved it. What is it? But when you explain it for after a while, how long the meat has been seasoned and the process it went through, they appreciate that fact. And the fact that, you know, they can find within the neighborhood they live in, it's another advantage that they have. So it's a bit surprising for from my end, but it's actually a good surprise. And we're looking forward more to them, families.
Sure. Have you noticed that people in the area maybe have been more interested in learning more about the Somali or Peruvian culture overall, using food kind of as a gateway to learn more about, the larger aspects, the greater aspects of you know, Somali culture and traditions? I think I saw, for example, I think on your website that the restaurants did something to celebrate Somali Independence Day, for example. So do you find that, you know, food is also being used as a cultural gateway to educate the community too?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, as you put it well, it is a way where the community that can connect and collaborate. And I'm glad that we have this platform where different people, different background, different understanding, different politics can come and have a conversation. At the end of the day, they have different perspective.
That's great. So what's next for the mix? What can we expect?
Well, nowadays, well, you know, we are living different times. We have to ride this wave first. Let it just slow down.
Right, and the COVID wave.
Yeah, the COVID wave. And what our thoughts were trying to open maybe two more restaurants in, mm-hmm. in town. And well, that's still our idea, but we are waiting a little bit for this to just to be over with, you know.
Sure, and you're not alone in that. You know, there are a lot of brick and mortar restaurants that have, you know, either slowed their expansion or were planning to open, going from a food truck to you know, brick and mortar more. You know, permanent facility and have held back on that. But you all have seemed to, you know, weather the you know, first aspects of this, you know, uncertain times during this pandemic very well. And I'm assuming you did take out for a good portion the time.
We did. We even closed for 3 weeks. So we followed all the specifications and advices from the Ohio government and the CDC and all that, the health department.
Sure.
So we even had an article on the Dispatch that we were following. We were one of the first that were following all the rules that were set out.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, it's been tough. I'm not going to tell you it wasn't, but it's not. We were still living it. But we're still here. We've created a loyalty that with our clients, and they're here supporting us. If it weren't for them, those would be closed. But we appreciate that support.
Sure.
I want to add. I know that we mentioned plenty of people. Also, Northern community is actually one of the few communities that's been extremely aggressive,
yeah.
Where they request catering under different events when it comes to cooking out the different families and different birthdays. So it's because of our neighborhood, honestly.
Sure.
Not because of our communities, because of our neighborhood that we mm-hmm. live in, mm-hmm. those are our foundation, those are our backbone, and we are supremely appreciative of the support that we got from those two communities, Clintonville and Orlando.
Well, and I think that's a great place for us to wrap up our conversation, because what you guys are saying is, I think, very inspiring and part of what we have been trying to do and tell the story all through season one of Eat Your Heartland Out. And that is about showing how, you know, new Americans end up changing the flavor landscape and the culture around them, bringing in the diversity and, you know, the specific aspects of your individual cultures. And all of a sudden, they're the cultures of the community you live in. So you've just described, you know, these neighborhoods, not necessarily Somali communities or Peruvian communities, but, you know, neighborhoods of Ohioans that may have been here for generations that are ordering your food, that are coming in, that are asking, you know, placing catering orders, and eating camel. And talk about, you know, a real American melting pot that in the middle of, you know, the state of Ohio, surrounded by, you know, corn and everything else, there you guys are bringing a new dynamic in into the American Midwest and making the Midwest your own. And that is just wonderful. And I'm time and again, we see our communities all across, whether it's, you know, Lebanese in Kansas or Iraqis, Christians in Michigan or Russian Mennonites in South Dakota, or of course, you know, our indigenous neighbors. Each one of these communities, just like yours, has really colored the food landscape of the American Midwest, making us a lot more than just corn dogs, meatloaf, and, you know, butter, right. Butter statues at the state fair. So I am so glad that we've had a chance to chat. And maybe we'll have you back on at some point and you can give us an update.
That would be great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks to you both. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the first season of Eat Your Heartland Out. This has been so much fun for me. I hope it has been a lot of fun for you. I've learned a lot. I hope that you've learned a little bit more about the wonderful, diverse flavors and cultures of the American Midwest. But while this is the last episode of season one, good news is there's going to be a season two. So tune back in a few weeks. Season two is going to be up and running with more bold flavors, tastes, cultures, experiences of the American Midwest. There's no way we could do all of it in season one. There's still so much more to cover. So tune back in to season two for Eat Your Heartland Out on the Heritage Radio Network. It's been my honor to be your tour guide and host, Capri Cafaro, for season one. Tune back in for season two. Eat Your Heartland Out is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.